We're doing an example. You know, you just heard the battle of Kurukshetra being pain or life, death. Since there are two important words mentioned, karma and death, or deaths. It's very familiar, the word death is quite familiar because it is used in our daily life, especially in the commercial sense. But here we are talking about the death that we put to each other during our lifetime. And that kind of death is considered as a karmic death. Now the word karma, although quite familiar in this country, there's a lot of misunderstanding behind this. There are many views regarding that word, but at least we can come across, many such views. For instance, karma means my destiny, my kismet, whatever is happening is fixed, that is my karma, that is on the road, that's my karma. Then there are other things that karma in terms of papa and punya as punishment. Then suffering others they take it as punishment through karma. This is quite a narrow view about karma. The other view and a very important view is karma as a law in nature. So today we will be concerned mainly, if at all mainly with karma, as a law. That means we are now within the four walls of the law and not our own personal conjectures. That if at all anything has to be said, it has to be said as a natural law. For philosophy can be merely speculative. But philosophy has to be based on cosmic facts, not only facts of life, not only facts of nature, but it should be based on cosmic facts. And one of the most important cosmic facts is fundamental, that the whole universe is an orderly universe of love. If we once and for all accept this, then the whole problem of life and the whole question of our duty to each other, the whole ethical questions, can be resolved into on and upon this central fact, that if this is the universe of love, then anything and everything that happens, either at a cosmic level or at the individual level or at the social level or political level, happens not haphazardly or by chance, but under love. Now, this is the premise upon which the whole of our meaning will be felt. If you reject this fundamental principle, then the whole thing becomes meaningless. Now regarding destiny, also there are various views. Now one view is, of course, that destiny is supreme. The other view is, oh, man is supreme. The third view, as we just mentioned, is that the law is supreme. Now when we say destiny is supreme, of course there is some meaning in it. But then it is taken to literally. Because these people think that everything is fixed, everything is predestined. And predestined by whom? By some outside authority, by some invisible providence, some mighty intelligence and so on. And because it is fixed, we are so hidebound into this so-called destiny. Then somebody feels helpless, impotent to come out of this situation. In fact, they do not make any such effort. So a kind of passivity can settle into this condition. Another thing is, this helplessness may lead to people seeking help from outside. Since there is an outside agency which is responsible for our destiny, we seek help from outside agencies. And therefore we went into not for superstitious beliefs and rituals, rites, going to our pandits, etc., etc. The other extreme view is the man is supreme. And we have a very good historical event of the president of Russia, Stalin. Once people were arguing with him in his own cabinet, and he says to hell with Destin. And once very angry, somebody mentioned something about Destin. And he shouted to hell with Destin. And the moment he said that, there was a choking in his throat. And he managed it. But in 9 months, he passed away by a stroke. The man would think that I can do anything, because man is supreme. Man can do anything. And this kind of, there's some need in it also. But it is taken too far. Then you become desperate, despotic. You become irresponsible. You think you are quite free. And the freedom, that means license to do what I like. So this is another misunderstanding about man being free. Then the third truth, as we said, that God is supreme. And therefore, our destiny is not an arbitrary event, nor it is an outside power which is pulling the strings and controlling and guiding our life. But that it is governed by some harmonious intelligence which governs this whole universe. This harmonious intelligence is not something which is a God whom you can pray to, or whom you can call out, and you can fall on your head and head posture. Nothing of the kind can help you, or help us rather, because there is justice in this universal law. You see, anything that is a law, whether it is a physical law, physico-chemical law, or chemistry, it is not only fixed, but it is based on certain mathematical calculations. And they are accurate, absolutely accurate. So no amount of trying can make a 0 into 1 or 1 into 2. It is exactly accurate and fit. Right thing at the right place. Fitness of things. And because of this, there is an element of compassion. Compassion, because supposing if today the gravity is there which keeps us walking together comfortably, if tomorrow a little bit of gravity is withdrawn, then we can't walk properly, we just stumble. As it happened when the astronauts were in certain distance, there was lack of gravity and they were unbalanced. So the law of gravity keeps us steady together. This is only one instance. So it is the law that prevails which keeps the world moving. And therefore, even destiny should be under the law. And it is not a man-made law. Neither is it outside of us. It is something that rules our breath. It is something that rules our interrelationships. It works even in the realm of psychology. So in every department of life, if you accept love, then why not in this subject of destiny? Now if you consider this, the justice of the law, then I think we can go through a reading that will clarify our issue. Then the handout are given to you. It says, almost like a fundamental law in a poetic language. Sir Edwin Arnold says, each man's life, the outcome of his common living is. Now, accepting or rejecting. Each man's life, I mean the sum total of his life. It doesn't mean the detail of his life. The sum total of his life is the outcome of his former living is. So here there is presumption that there is some such thing as former living, which is another uncollectible statement we will have to make, the subject of reincarnation, which we are going to take up next Sunday. But we will not go into that at least. You see, the very first stanza from the Dhammapada says that what we are is the sum total of the quality of the thought that we have generated. We are what we are is because of our thought. We are made up of our thought. So that what the stuff of which we are made, actually are the head of our thought. And this is amazing, but Varanologists, varanologists, those who can read your face and tell you what kind of a person you are, and even tell you about your destiny. They can tell you from your feature what kind of personality you are, your inner nature, both good, bad and indifferent. Now it is because this law is so tremendous that our thought pattern, the pattern of our thought, reflects itself on our face. It's very simple. The smile reflects the quality of our feelings, the feeling of happiness, joy, mischief, etc. Our long face represents something, or a frown represents something, or a cold face represents something. This is a simple example. That many of these outward things is merely a reflection of a deeper layer of our nature. Not only that, but the events that take place also are actually precipitated by our inner nature. If a man is by nature inauspicious, he thinks that I am an inauspicious man. You have seen my movie, who always calls himself Dalinda, I am inauspicious. Somehow whether he went on inviting events which turned out to be against him, accidents. There are people who are accident prone, not only because there was an element of violence in them, but there is also the element of defeat in them. Now this kind of violence on one side and defeat on the other brings about and attracts to themselves accidents. So this is only by way of example. You can call millions of examples from our life in which you can show that much of that happens to us is the result of our own making. If not far away from the past, even in this, psychologist will tell you, the very first 7 years of a child's life prepares the child for his future. If the child is kept timid and forced to obey, a total slavish behavior, that child will never be able to lift up his head and walk erect. Even when he walks too, as if he is burdened with something, even the walking stupidness has some kind of a servility. It is not really humility, sometimes servility. And this is again by your example. So, whatever happens to us is the result of the quality of the thought, the quality of the life of us. Now this is one, if you accept this, then instead of pointing our fingers at our others, we are pointing many fingers at ourselves. So we blame destiny, we blame God, we blame this, we blame that. But actually, we are at the center of our destiny, and we are ourselves, our destiny is written by our own hands. This is a very unpalatable thing, but as we accept them, the burden of the tumors that is exactly that. But in that sense also, in that sense the man is free. He is free to write his destiny. This free agent on earth. And when we say he, who is that he we are talking about? Is it the puny man that is walking in the street who lives for 50, 60, 70 years? Here, philosophy introduces a very important doctrine. And if you miss that, it is like reading a Ramayana and missing Rama. The central hero of the whole philosophy, I might even say the whole of sacred doctrine, the whole central thread that runs through and through is the spiritual nature of man. That man in his essential nature, his true inner nature, essentially, truly, is a spiritual entity because he has a divine position. You have to accept this. If you don't accept that, the rest of it is nonsense. But it is this immortal entity which has to work through, labor under a garment called personality, called human body, which is mortal, necessary. It is his own instrument given to him in his own hand by nature. He has to work through that instrument. But the instrument is that which he has made in his past. And now he is going to convert this instrument into something that is new. That also is his prerogative. Just as he is a victim of his past, He is also the master of his fate, inasmuch as that he can make karma his future, now and here, depending upon the assets with which he is got. Now here, there is something called fixed destiny. There is such a thing as the exigencies of birth. The very heredity with which we are born, the conditions in which we are born, the city, the country, and the society in which we are born, the period in which we are born, all these things naturally are going to fix something in us. There is no getting away from that. This is our real destiny with which we are born. But what we are going to do with this? There have been people who have been autistic in the very early years of their life. They were great scientists. But later on they shone up into the world. They proved their worth. Because their germ of goodness and greatness was their enemy, which was hidden, which was encumbered by this so-called autism or other physical and psychological defects. But these people found a way out of it. They burst open all the things which were binding them. There was a secret urge in them to shine forth. And it is this, many of these great people, if you go into the life of their early life, they were non-entities, they were backbenchers. Einstein was one of them, backbenchers. He was stuttering, he couldn't speak properly. That's when he was so ashamed. He used to, he was a backbencher, he would sit behind, wouldn't hardly talk. But he was thinking, he was constantly thinking. And inclination towards maths was there right from his childhood. That's why he became a mathematical genius. But these are the seeds. So that here was a person, for instance, born with physiological and psychological handicaps. But the stuff which he got from his past, the tremendous power for mathematics, unfolded given an opportunity. Now this opportunity again comes another, about which we shall go into it. So again we come back to this, that we are now going to talk about the real man. So, and he is also the storehouse of all that has happened to me. So from the long past, or at least from the present life, whatever that has happened is impressed on the child's self, child's inner nature. And that inner nature is an inner tablet upon which everything is registered and nothing is lost. Because of which and upon which the whole unfoldment takes place. Sometimes in spite of the adverse circumstances, that individual is so tough inside, that in spite of this adversity of the early childhood, he shines forth. You have got that Tom Brown school days, the story of that young boy. There are very adverse orphan circumstances in which he was brought up. But he could shine forth. Because he could shine forth, circumstances came inviting to him. It's very strange. But you take one step in the direction, in the right direction, and you find nature takes two steps in our direction. This is one of the laws which we do not recognize, but this is a very cheerful law. So there is such a thing as something which a pleasure under which we are born. The sum total of the past karma, as we call it. And then, given a chance, it's like a seed. Given the proper soil, it fructifies, opens. Now, even the soil, now talking about the soil, soil is something outside of us, we think. Do we think that the great wise law, which has brought us now here on this earth, which has made it possible to take birth in that particular family, do you think it is quite haphazardly that he has given us into this particular family, into these particular conditions? That yes, that there is no such background under which this has happened? That even the soil is also permitted and allowable to. There is a bizarre God which says that Kiri Makan Archi Naman. That for Kiri, nature has made available even this little kind, which is a dana of food. And for a hathi, even a man, a massive quantity of food is also made available for him. make provisions for him.
It is such kind of
compassion of nature that he makes provisions for everything. Now with this background, if we now go to the mechanism under which this law prevails, then we can go to the reading, that will be better. I think we will go to the second reading. Destiny is an English word applied to karma, so strong and so overpowering that his action cannot be counteracted by other karma. But in the sense that all happenings are under karma, that all things are destined and can happen. So here there is an emphasis on destiny. No wonder. There is, of course, of destiny on one side. But then who is this? What is this karma? Then he described karma a little earlier. He described karma is an unerring tendency in nature to restore equilibrium. What a tremendous definition. It is not merely a matter of action and reaction. It is a force which brings about equilibrium in nature. That is his main purpose, that is his aim, that is a raison d'etre, that is the reason why it is done. So karma is a mighty law, it's a law of law. You said eternal harmony. So the karma is an unerring tendency in nature to restore equilibrium, and therefore we say describe karma as the law of readjustment, which ever tends to restore disturbed equilibrium. On this treatment, on the physical and the broken harmony on the moral life. In fact, it works on all the three planes, on the physical plane, on the psychic plane, on the moral plane, and as well as on the spiritual plane. So that whatever action we perform at the physical level, the reaction is bound to set up at the physical level. If I overeat, I'm bound to suffer from some kind of discomfort at the physical level. But if I keep eating it again and again, then at the moral level, some kind of gluttony, a kind of nature of gluttony has been introduced in me. So at the moral level, I have tainted my character. And therefore the reaction is bound to come up in that level. We extend that kind of gluttony as a kind of a greed, no word. I think in the direction of food. It may be also a kind of a lust in the direction of sensuousness. So we have weakened our nature by overeating repeatedly. So in that sense, that any physical action in this lifetime we are able to see. But here we are talking of destiny. That is a long drawn out thing. And that is where we do not know as to how this has affected my life. Why this misery has taken place in my life? Why this suffering? Why this? Some people are born with advantages, some with disadvantages. Now this question continuously bothers. It is because our narrow view is that we think that action-reaction takes place within one lifetime. Here the law of karma means it is a law of action and reaction. It is also called law of causation. It is that in physics also. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction at the physical level. But it is also then at the moral level. That every action has its corresponding equal and opposite reaction coming from nature itself. Because if you disturb a blessed lake, then disturbance goes back to the border and comes back to the same place at which a disturbance takes place. So reaction is bound to set in. And therefore if you create some kind of vibrations or disturbance, it is not possible to get away with it. Because disturbance is going to come back to us. It is amazing to say, and a very unpalatable thing to accept, that the large scale destruction that takes place on this earth are the result of the large scale destructive tendencies generated by humanity. Humanity collectively generates such kind of clouds that it is bound to rain. As one poet says, the clouds that man, the clouds that God sent are few, but the clouds that man make are many.
It is these
clouds of gloominess that we see around us are man-made. The collective thought of humanity creates a kind of psychic atmosphere which apparently indiscriminately falls on the people who are there. And therefore, tragedy at the last case can take place. And the so-called innocent people may appear innocent in this lifetime. But there is no such thing as innocent in a person. Because if it has happened to me, I must have a hand in it. Although I may not be aware of it. I may have forgotten my past. If I make you look back into my past, I might be even horrified. What kind of an individual I might have been in the past. I may be very goody-goody, very silky, very nice, etc. Very gentle today. But I may have been a very ferocious man in the past. And under karma, this particular ferocity is under control because my bodily constitution is such, it is so tamasic, it is so phlegmatic, that today I am not able to use my, what shall I say, the sanguine or the bilious nature. So this, phlegmatically, physically I am there, but deep down inside of me, I have got that kind of viciousness, which is now captured away as temporarily, and with given a chance, can come forth. So then, the third position also says, talking about man being the maker of his destiny, that there is not an accident in our lives, not a misshapen day or a misfortune that could not be traced back to our own ways in this and or in another. Now it's possible sometimes to trace back in this very life. As we said, accident. As I just told you, medically speaking and psychologically speaking, there is such a thing as accident-prone people. They very often fall down, they very often tumble down, they very often make others fall. They create injuries. I have seen children who always drop things. They make break their toys, they break cups and saucers. Somehow or other, in their life, things keep breaking. They keep losing things. They keep some kind of destructive, unconscious behavior. This is a tendency in them, which bring in them, in their life, some kind of accidents. So, this cannot trace back in this or another. Now, it is not possible for us to trace back because we have forgotten our past. We have forgotten our very childhood. We have known the kind of trauma we have undergone during our childhood. This trauma of the childhood reflects itself in our lifetime, in our dreams, in sleep of the tongue. Actually, it happens in the sleep of our tongue. The trauma of our life can come in that fashion. Psychologists tell you. But that is for our immediate life. How about some trouble of the soul in the past life? It is said, at least the ancient wisdom says that we are on this earth for the last 18 million years. Are we going to say that we have never been in the company of the wise ones in these 18 million years? Are we going to say that we have always been barbaric in all these 18 million years? At least the last skull that was discovered somewhere, it was about 5.5 million years old. So humanity has passed through that period. And simultaneously there were great civilizations, at the same time there were very degraded areas, barbarous areas, simultaneously existing together. So we have had our hand in the past. Only thing is we cannot recall it. But there are many mythological stories about Krishna and Rama, who tells the people that you look back and can you go back and back and back and you'll be able to find out. In fact, one of the tests of a Buddhist arhat, his ability to look back into last number of births. An arhat who has just recently developed his spiritual eyesight. We'll be able to tell you about last 5-10 lives. An arhat of a very advanced nature will be able to tell you about 30-40 lives in the past. And Buddha was supposed to be, it is called, fully enlightened Buddha. He was able to tell the whole of his path, including that little germ of him, what is called the monadic light. which pass through mineral, vegetable and the animal kingdom. And all the experiences of that also is what we are able to recall. So this has been historical proof, historical evidence. A kind of a, they stand on behalf of humanity and say, yes, there is that. Krishna tells Arjuna, you know your past, but I know my own. Because when Arjuna asks, how is it that you are able to teach to so many people in the ages past? Then Krishna says that then you do not remember your own past, I know. And we may have been able to, when he gives this Vishwarupa vision, he made him see the whole intensity of the past, immensity of the past. So we have narrowed down our life to this 2 square and 20. This very little years of our life. And therefore when we say life, we mean really our present life, our own biodata, recovered by our biodata. Now all these things, as we said, is not lost. Because everything in nature is registered. As we just said, the psychology believes that everything is registered in our subconscious mind. But there is a higher tablet of our nature, upon which higher things are registered. There is a lower tablet of our subconscious, we do alone. But maybe super consciousness in us. That man has got the 3 levels of consciousness. Not only the conscious level to which you and I now belong, but the subconscious, which is the world of the things, and there is a super consciousness to which one can rise if you want to rise, if you know how to. So that is said that the last reading tells, the 4th reading says on the same page, eternal justice, which is but another name for karma, has been spoken of as awarding this or that state of life to the reincarnating ego. Reincarnating ego is that permanent entity about which we just mentioned. Solely, how? As a mere balance of account in the ledger of life. With a credit payment in one case by way of reward, and a judgment for debt in another by way of punishment. So here is an accounting. And accounting takes place in an invisible world, in that unseen tablet. And the resulting effect of this accounting is like a ledger. And we just mentioned the ledger of life, in which nature has an accounting. On one side there are the credit side, the other there is a debit side. On the credit side there are a lot of assets. On the other side there are a lot of liabilities, there are gains and loss, etc. But the continual balancing is done by nature. This adjustment takes place by a very precise law, the law of karma, the utterly just and merciful. Now when this balancing takes place, the result is the effect that we feel and that is created by the free agent for man himself. Now this is also a law of compensation. Inasmuch as it compensates for the wrong that we have done as debts, we have created debts and we must pay up as some kind of suffering and some kind of discomfort, some kind of disadvantages of life. A very common thing, suddenly you have been laughing at the hunchback now and then. You make a joke of that and person who is handicapped. He cannot escape this event. Because we have disdainfully looked upon a fellow human being. A reaction is bound to set into our psyche. An impression has taken place into our inner nature. Sometime or the other, we are bound to undergo some kind of deformity. First of all, there will be deformity of our character. There will be equally a deformity at the physical level. So this is a kind of reaction that takes place. That's why there is a superstitious belief. In those days, lepers were taken as sinful people. People believe that lepers are sinful people. They should be segregated, they should be punished. Nature is punishing them. Now maybe it's like truth in them, maybe. But our looking at leper with a disdainful eyes, with a untouchability. Thinking that he is not worthy of our company. Apart from the fact that he can infect us. By the way, leprosy is the least contagious of the infectious diseases. People have been staying with lepers for 30 years, like Father Damien. He stayed with the lepers for 32 years in their asylum. Surrounded by lepers everywhere, this great father, who served their needs, bathed them, dressed them, every day spent his lifetime with them, 32 years. And then finally, he contracted their disease. In fact, he secretly wished it, because he said, because that the nun to him confessed, he said, I wish it, that it should happen to me. So that I may too end over that experience of what it means to be without the limbs, without the nose, without the lips. So, when we listen at other people's witnesses, whenever we condemn anything, this condemnation comes back to us. How are we to show that our hands are clean? Today, through our hands are clean, maybe. How do we know that today we are not going to do the same thing? In fact, the very fact that we have wisdomfully pointed our finger at somebody else's evil, we are attracted to us under the law of the magnetic law of what is called attraction or repulsions. That is our magnetic law of repulsions and magnetic law of attraction. That is a psychical law by which we attract to ourselves the very thing that we disdain. So the best position is remain compassionate, remain kind. Don't react either too happily about the good things that happen, nor too reactively to things that is not pleasant to us, unpleasant to us. And especially condemnation. This is one way by which we unconsciously hurt others. We make things difficult for the man who is handicapped. Handicapped in his character. Handicapped because of his stuttering. Handicapped because he can't be intelligent. As a stupid fellow, we always tell him. When you call somebody stupid, look down upon him as if not at our equal level, intellectually low. Our servants particularly. The way we treat our servants as though one has to keep a certain distance. No, we are not going to ask our servant to sleep on our bed. But we treat them as fellow human beings. Because they are also the spark of divinity. They are also our fellow brothers. That we are the sparks of divinity and therefore the children of the one divine principle of life, children of one God. And therefore we are brothers to each other. And this relationship with one another, this unbrotherly relationship, which is the great curse of humanity, the central sin of human being is treating another as outside of me, lower than me. Someone get it on. We have a little circle and I show ourselves. And somebody said, oh, I will draw a bigger circle and take you. It's a very nice problem. You took me out, drew a circle, and you took me out. He said, but I draw a bigger circle and took you in. Now this is a wonderful way of taking in people into our spiritual atmosphere. All embracing. See? Jesus Christ in the last days, he says, he actually went, he says, how I take you, he says, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how I can take you into my arms. And that arms on his shoulder is described as a bird with the wing. He says, like a mother bird, yes, how I wish I can take you in that. And you will not heal, you will not listen to me. So this compassionate ones, he takes everybody into his arms. We can little emulate that. Great ones. In the sense that our relationships, in our final relationship, there is nothing else but give and take. This debt that we owe to others. So one of the ways by which you create the debt is treating our fellow human being at a lower level to which he belongs. Unfortunately, he happens to be at a lower level now at this time. But how do we know? Today's king can become a beggar and today's beggar can become a king. How are you going to know about it? In these interrelationships, you can't be absolutely sure of anybody being where he is today. We cannot judge anything at past, at the present level, at the face level. Because behind that man there is a huge past. He may be a saint in a very simple clothes, or he may be a great, wicked man in a very gorgeous attire. One can never know about this. So, this appearances are very deceptive. Now, if you consider this life as an opportunity to pay up our debts, an opportunity to overcome our defects, then we will not worry about what's happening. If you are continually concerned about the welfare of others, concerned about the fellow human being, less, a little less concerned about ourselves. Unfortunately, we put ourselves to the center and the world is around us. We are like a little frog living in a little pond, and this is our world. Me and my family. Mother will say, me and my babies. You know, this kind of little life. If you can enlarge our concern for it by consciously thinking, there is one of the Buddhist meditations which says, let me be happy. He repeats yourself, let me be happy. Let my family be happy. And he keeps on repeating, let my family. Let my dear and dear ones be happy. Let my city people be happy. And he keeps repeating this. Let this country may be happy. You know, this expands. And he doesn't stop at this earth, he says, let this universe be happy. Now this kind of, it's called Maitri Bhavana. This is a kind of meditation. When it is thrown out, the man in the center is the recipient of the tremendous forces which comes out. He becomes auspicious, actually becomes auspicious. He becomes a center of spiritual influence. Wherever he stands, some kind of harmonious atmosphere, harmonious atmosphere is settled. He may be an unknown person, but passed through us. But having passed through us, he has left behind his aroma. Is aroma of his own goodness. There are unknown saints in our midst, just as there are unknown devils also in our midst, there are unknown saints. And you and I are capable of that. By just trying our little gestures with our fellow human being, with gentleness, with concern, with sensitivity, and with responsibility. So, there is a lot we can say, but we'd like to end finally. Two devils, Rasika. As a lost jewel may be recovered from the very depths of the time's mind, so can the most abundant snatch himself from the mire of sin. If only the precious gem of gems, the sparkling gem of Atman, is loved. Each of us must do that for himself. Each one can, if he but will and pursue. So we can take up your questions, preferably on this subject.
So, my question is, well, I believe all our understanding of all of us over years, if we are paying for our debts for which we have done, for which we have done in the past, that can to a certain extent get reduced on account of good deeds that you do also. Yeah. Am I right? Now, I come to this third saying, which says, third saying on the first page. The reason why I am saying this is because I find a bit of contradiction between my understanding and this over here. The third saying, the third quotation is, destiny is the English word applied to karma so strong and overpowering that its action cannot be counteracted. So if we are saying that the debts that we are paid could to a certain extent get reduced by our good deeds, then in this quotation how can it be possible that we are saying that its action cannot be counteracted by other karma? So that means it says Buddha is saying that we have to pay for our own debts, for our mistakes that we have done in the past, irrespective of whether we have done something good or not. So I find a bit of a contradiction over here. And in fact, yes, that is it.
You see, here it means particularly that there are some conditions of our life which we cannot change. If I am born of a fair-looking parents, if a child is born of a fair-looking parents, his skin is bound to be white because of the hereditary tendency in skin. Now he can't change that. Not a Negro's child is bound to be a Negroid. Now this is something very much fixed. So in certain sense, the circumstances of birth, the time, the civilization under which you are born, the society under which you are born, are something which is fixed, which cannot be changed. But as regards creating debts and creating merits on the side, there is a continuous balancing going on in our life. Because at this moment you are told a lie from another child, you have put your hand on the shoulder of a friend with some kindness. The very next moment, you have said a lie to one friend, you turn back to another friend and put your gentle hand on the other. Immediately it will contract to your mind. But there is some thought about the tendencies that you have generated in you, of being kind on one side and being liars on the other. They will run their clash and they will bring about ultimate result, which balancing of permanently. It is such a complex thing. It is such a complex thing. It is not like an accountant writing in a book of accountants and says, this. Of course, there is some belief that there are others called recording angels who read out the whole record when you enter into heaven, and that you have read out the record of your positive side and your negative side, and the sum total of it, and the ultimate, the last line. What you say in common terms, the last conclusion, that will determine your heaven or hell. It's not mechanical like that. But there is a continuous going on in our character. Each time we do good thing and each time we do wrong thing, now and then, we keep repeating this. There is an internal balancing going on. The sum total of it is what you and I are. And to that extent, we accept that kind of karma to which we belong. To which the karma to the destiny which belongs to us. The destiny comes back to us, the events that come to us under the law of attraction, exactly in proportion to the quality of the life I live. Which means a mixture, we are all a mixture. And there is a natural balancing going on. So there are some things which are definitely fixed. This is called one conclusion. But when a huge clouds are gathered, you are saying the rain is bound to fall. So like that, there are certain things which are exactly fixed. But there is limb which takes further freeway, leeway what is called, when you can make adjustments. And it is for you and me to make those adjustments. It is possible to make up for a long lost years of our life. So when my first 20, 30 years are wasted swimming, reading, dancing, weightlifting, enjoying a youth. But a turning point takes place in my life, suddenly I have lost my eyes. This turning point, fortunately, under karma has come back to me, has done complete turn my life. And now inclined to philosophical thinking, inclined to meeting people, inclined to becoming kind to others and so on. So turning my takes place. So destiny works in a wonderful way by which you can bring about a turn in you. And it is impossible for any person who can foresee and foretell. But here we are talking about the laws which govern our life. The laws is that there is an internal balancing going on regularly, continually. And at the end of the life, a whole, what is called the guardian angel, or what is called the recording angel, will read out, as it is said, among the verses, what is called Vaman Amshasman, Saras Rajan and Vaman Amshasman are supposed to read out our account.
So then in that case, going by what you said, would it be correct if we say instead that destiny is the English word applied to karma so strong and overpowering that its action, instead of saying cannot, would it be more appropriate if we say may not be counteracted? Because if we say directly cannot, that means it's just taking one straight path that under any circumstances it cannot be counteracted. But going by what you said, like if by birth a person is a Negro, then he's, am I right?
Yes, it can be counteracted.
Yeah. So instead of saying cannot be counteracted, it may not be counteracted. That means certain kinds of karmas can be counteracted, certain kinds of karmas cannot be counteracted.
So that's the problem of what that it can be counteracted most of the time. It is in our hands to do that. But there is certain thing which cannot be counteracted. All happening yes. Under banner, all things are destined. Now when you say that destined, what is destined? Destined is that, the word destiny by definition is that, which is apparently fixed as far as this particular life is concerned. You are born with certain outline of your destiny, outline, not the details. It is for you to fill up the detail. The outline, for instance, the very number of years for you are going to be born is already fixed genetically into the constitution of the child. Medically also it is true. The very quality of the physical life is already fixed into the very fetus in which we are born, into the womb into which we are born. So there are certain things which are so completely fixed you can't get away with it. That is this. But having got that estate, how are we now going to respond? That's why a child is supposed to be irresponsible for the first 7 years of his life. But later on, he is completely finished, in fact, responsible for his own action. To that extent, he can make or mark his destiny.
Well, destiny being fixed, well, I'll put it this way. Let's say by attending this lecture, I'm being reformed. So my destiny will change. My actions will change in future because I'm getting reformed by listening to this lecture. So in a way, the destiny is also, and the factors influencing it is, they are variable. So, till at this point of time, it has been fixed. But in future, by virtue of this, it is going to change.
I agree. So that is, there are two aspects. But the emphasis our is that it is in our hand to make certain amount of changes by changing ourselves. We don't have to change our environment. If we start changing ourselves, sooner or later, if not in this lifetime, we are going to face our own good karma. If you keep trying in this lifetime, some people at least have that, they keep on trying, but they fail. This don't think it is wrong. This failure, it may be a failure in this lifetime. But effort is never lost. Every effort that is done in the right or wrong direction must come back to us in future days.
Thank you.